squad cars. The story you're about to hear is true. Details are supplied from the official case files by the South African police. Only names and places have been changed to protect innocent people involved.
Johannesburg, April the 17th, 2 p.m. Constable Johnny Wilson is standing at the notice board in radio headquarters. He is looking at the names on the duty roster. He is particularly concerned with the name that appears alongside his own as the crew member of Car 17.
F. Rittenberg.
Who's Rittenberg?
Here.
Ah,
Constable Wilson.
Oh, I wonder what you look like. Pleased to meet you.
How do you do? What's the F for?
France. They call me Francie.
Uh-huh. Oh, my name's Johnny.
I guessed if I just stood around, you'd make yourself known to me.
First shift, eh?
Yeah.
Excited?
Yeah. Been looking forward to this all through police college.
Yeah, I remember how it was with me.
What this 2-10 shift like?
How do you mean?
A lot of action.
Ah, sometimes. Depends. Well, one thing I can promise you, you won't be bored.
Do you get called to murders and things?
Well, sometimes. Variety is the spice of life in this job. Last week, Hank and I almost had to deliver a baby in the back seat.
Hank?
My ex-partner.
What happened to him? Did he get hurt?
Oh, no. He's been transferred. His father died and his mother's an invalid. And they live at Reddersburg in the Free State, farming people. And Hank didn't like the idea of his mother being alone. Well, she just couldn't be too ill. So he requested a transfer.
Were you together long?
Nearly a year.
You'll miss him.
Yeah. Get used to people.
Is he a good policeman?
Yeah, one of the best.
He's going to be hard to live up to.
You'll be all right. Come on.
Where are we going?
Well, we must start the shift with a full tank of petrol. Check the oil and water, too.
8:50 p.m., Constables Wilson and Rittenberg have pursued a vehicle, the occupants of which were behaving in a suspicious manner, and are returning to the central area via the Rand Airport Road.
Poor bloke got the shock of his life.
Serves him right. It obviously wasn't his wife.
Obviously.
I'll bet he thought we were the woman's husband.
Well, he was a bit pale around the gills, wasn't he?
White as a sheet. I don't know how people could be like that.
You're young. You'll learn a lot of things before you're much older.
Yeah, I suppose so. Hey. What's that light over there?
Where?
Over there, in the felt.
They must be burning grass.
Can't be too early. Besides, it's only in one place.
Probably a night watchman who's lit a fire to keep warm.
That's open felt. What would a watchman be doing out there? And it's not cold enough for a fire.
Not bad. You've learned a lot at the college, eh?
I think we should go and take a look.
Yeah, okay. I'll be able to see that fire for miles.
Yeah. I wonder what's burning. Too big a fire for wood or grass.
Yeah. Looks more like a chemical fire. Plastics or petrol.
We'll soon see. There's a gate over there.
Which somebody has left open.
Mind the sump on that rock.
I'll watch it.
It's a fire and an oil drum.
It's enormous, too.
Better not park too close. It may explode or something.
Yeah, and we don't want the car catching fire. We'd have a tough time explaining that in a report.
Leave a log, but it's hot.
Yeah, but it won't last long. Petrol fire.
Can you see in?
No, not properly. Now, there's something in there.
Yeah, it looks like a bundle of old rags or something.
Yeah. Now, hang on a sec. Now, come and look from here. Now, look at that. What do you make of it?
It's
a foot. A human foot. Well, we've got to put this fire out, boy.
Oh.
Well, I'll push the drum over for a start.
You'll get burnt, man.
Well, not if I crouch down. Hang, but it's hot. A good hard shove with my foot is all that's needed.
Nice work, Johnny.
Now, come and help me put the fire out.
What with?
We'll scratch up some sand and gravel. We shouldn't have much trouble now that I've turned it over.
Now, that's it. Now, get a pile of stuff together and we'll throw it in when we've got enough. Huh? Smother the flames.
Okay.
Ready?
Ready.
Right. Great. Now, where's the torch, Franz?
Yeah.
Let's have a look. Dear heaven. Oh, poor devil.
European or non-European?
A European man.
Gee, it's horrible, eh?
Yeah. I've seen some things, but never one like this before.
Body can't have been in the drum long.
It's not long since we drove past here, going up the road towards the race course.
They must have been doing it, putting the body in the drum, I mean, when we drove past.
Yeah. Well, help me tip it up.
It's hot, man.
Yeah, it's too hot to handle. Yeah, a better report would be found. I'll go and talk to control, Franz. You have a look around, eh?
Okay, Johnny.
And just be careful not to disturb any prints, eh?
Okay.
17 to control. Car 17 to control. Come in, control. Over.
Go ahead, 17. Over.
Reporting the discovery of a European body being burnt in an oil drum. Location? The felt on the left-hand side of the Ront Airport Road coming out of town. It's about a mile from the Heidelberg Road. Over.
Stay where you are and await further instructions. Over and out.
What did they say?
Oh, we've got to stick around.
They'll be sending somebody, eh?
Yeah, that's right.
Who?
Well, it'll be somebody from the murder squad in Brixton. Probably Lieutenant Lobiskotny.
p.m. Lieutenant Lobiskotny, having been called away from a drive-in movie, arrives at the scene of the gruesome discovery.
Good evening, sir.
Constable?
Constables Wilson and Rittenberg, sir.
Good evening, Constable. Sir? Where is it?
Over here, sir. As soon as the drum was cool enough, sir, we tipped it out.
Oh, fine. Not the prettiest corpse I ever saw. Couldn't have been burning long before you found it.
No, sir, that's what we figured.
It was you who put the fire out, eh?
Yes, sir.
Nice work.
But how on earth will you find anything to help you among this lot, sir?
I don't know. I'm just looking. It seems like a pathologist's nightmare. They've had worse than this, though.
Really, sir?
Oh, yes. Did you find anything?
Well, Constable Rittenberg found some footprints and tie marks, sir.
No way, Constable. Over here, sir. Yeah. This is where they parked the car. Just give me your torch, please. Here you are, sir. Thank you. Two sets of prints, eh?
Yes, sir. Man and woman.
European or non-European?
I don't know, sir.
Neither do I. Teasing you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
A pretty business for a woman to be involved in, isn't it, Constable?
Yes, sir.
Well, we'll have those photographs, those prints and the tire marks, and I'll have members of my staff make plaster casts of them in the morning. There's not much I can do here tonight. In the morning, that drum and its contents will be properly cool. And they'll be likely working, too. I'll arrange for you two to be relieved. Good night.
Good night, sir.
Good night, sir.
April the 17th, 8:10 a.m. Lieutenant Turk Lobiskotny has returned to where the body in the oil drum was discovered, along with various members of his staff. While photographs and plaster casts are being taken, Lieutenant Lobiskotny and Warrant Officer Britt are sieving the ash from the drum and the dust in the immediate vicinity.
Yeah, there won't be much in this lot.
No, sir.
What time is the district coroner coming?
He should have been here by now.
I've got hold of Professor Coyle. He's helped us before.
Yes. I remember the professor, sir.
Oh, he did a fantastic job reconstructing that skeleton we found down the well.
Yeah. Amazing.
Oh, he was able to tell us that it was the skeleton of a woman. A woman would have at least 3 children and lives.
Yeah, but what staggered me was the way he figured out the angle of the shots that killed her.
He's something of a genius, the professor.
Nice chap, too. Nice sense of humor.
Hang on a sec. What's that?
Buckle, sir.
Put it out.
There you are, sir.
Stick it in this envelope. Shouldn't think that'll tell as much, but you'll never know.
Sieve some more, sir?
Yes. Oh, there are some mugs about. Imagine getting involved in something like this. Oh, there's no accounting for human nature.
Sorry, sir.
Hmm?
Just a minute.
What?
This, sir.
What is it?
Piece of charred material.
Let's have a look. This is handy.
What do you make of it, sir?
Well, it's a piece of shirt. An important piece, too, as far as we're concerned. It's the band of the collar. The piece with the label. Can you make this out?
T-U-N-I-C-A.
Well, how's your Latin?
Oh, non-existent.
Well, that's Latin for a shirt. Tunica. Ever heard of that make before?
No.
Well, neither have I.
There's a bit of a number here. Stamped on.
Oh. Yes. RE35. Is that a 7?
I think so.
Well, it must be a laundry mark. Well, if it is, we won't have much difficulty in identifying the victim. Shouldn't be difficult after that.
AM. Lieutenant Lovis Cockney and Warrant Officer Britt have finished sieving the ash and dust in the vicinity of the oil drum. They have been joined by Professor Quayle from the Department of Pathology.
You've met Professor Quayle, haven't you?
Yes, sir.
Are you, Mr. Breed?
In myself, sir. No complaints.
But you've got a bit of a puzzle on your hands, eh?
That's about the size of it.
We've got enough to help us, I think, Professor, but you've got a king-size headache coming your way.
Establishing cause of death, eh?
Yes.
Well, we've had worse than this. What about the skeleton in the well?
Well, I was only speaking to Warrant Officer Breed about that earlier.
I should think this one will be easier.
Well, I wish you luck with it. The district surgeon's been and gone, sir, and this is his report.
Yes. And a good doctor thinks he's found a bullet hole in the skull. Let's have a look. Funny place for a bullet wound. Right on top of the head. I'll judge the angle of entry yet, but I dare say we'll get all that in the lab later. Let's have another look here. War false teeth. Top set missing. Job of somebody here.
What's that?
Hawking this jawburn around the dentist in Jeppy Street.
That'll be me, sir. Got the feet for it.
Look. What have you managed to find?
Well, where's my list? Here we are. 7 brass eyelets from shoes or boots. 2 shoelace ends. 1 zip. It's about the length of the zip used in a man's trousers. 4 buttons. Badly burned. They could be of the victim's trousers. 3 what could have been shirt buttons. And there's a buckle. Presumably off a belt, and a piece of shirt collar.
That's our best clue. It's a miracle to me that it wasn't burnt along with the rest.
I'll be thinking about that. Very simple, really.
Might be to you, sir.
Imagine yourself all squashed up in an oil drum. If you'd been forced in, the parts of you which would be pressed against the sides would be the soles of your feet, your knees, and your back, including the upper portion of your spine. Now, anything pressed between you and the sides of the drum would stand a chance of surviving the flames.
Yes.
That's how we come to have that piece of the shirt's neckband and collar.
Is it going to help you much?
Well, I'm counting on it, Professor.
Well, I wish you luck.
The next day, 8:53 a.m., Major Monroe's office at Murder Squad Headquarters, Brixton. A council of war is being held to discuss what is already known as the oil drum murder.
Right. Now, just so that we're all in the picture, I've had Professor Quayle on the phone this morning. A preliminary report on his examination of the body. He's found another bullet hole. In fact, two more, to add to the one found by the district coroner. The one the coroner found was caused by a bullet entering the skull on the left side at an oblique angle. Professor Quayle has recovered the bullet. It's been sent to ballistics. We should have a report from them sometime today. The other two holes the professor found were the entrance and exit of another shot. This one entered the brain just above the right ear, and it came out in the left cheek, just below the cheekbone. The trajectory was downwards, which suggests that the shot was fired from above the deceased.
Probably while he was sitting down, sir?
Yes.
There was a car involved. I wonder if he was shot in the car.
Another question to be answered. Now we have three things requiring some hard routine work. There's some real slogging you've done in this one. There's what appears to be a laundry mark on the shirt collar. Someone has to check that. There's the make of shirt, and closer scrutiny in the lab has revealed what could be a manufacturer's serial number. Investigation may lead us to a retailer, and luck might help us find a customer. You never know. Anyway, it has to be checked, and that's number one. Number two is the laundry mark, or what appears to be the laundry mark. And thirdly, there's the jawbone and the false teeth.
That's my job, sir.
Oh, is it?
I've done Jeppy Street from end to end before, sir. They know me. It might make things easier.
Okay. And what about you, Lieutenant?
Well, if it's all right with you, sir, I'll take the make and the manufacturer's serial number.
Right. And I'll put another man on dry cleaners and laundries. Report back to me as soon as you find anything.
During the week that follows, the three detectives are kept busy continuously, driving, walking, questioning.
Good morning. I'm a police officer. Here are my credentials. As a wholesaler, perhaps you'll be able to help me. I'm trying to find the manufacturer or the agent for Tunica shirts.
Good morning, Doctor. It's me again. I wonder if I may have a word with your mechanic. Oh, not one of yours, eh?
Good afternoon. I have here a photograph of a portion of shirt bearing what could be a laundry mark.
Gee, pounding Jeppy Street hasn't half made my corns complaints.
Morning, gentlemen.
Good morning,
morning,
sir.
Morning, sir.
I've just been in with the Brigadier. He's wanting to know, how about getting on with the oil drum murder investigation? Well, how are we getting on? What an officer Blewett.
If there's a dentist I haven't met in Jeppy Street, sir, then he's only started his practice during the past 10 years. I've walked from one end of Jeppy Street to the other. I've interviewed every dental mechanic in the business. I've even been to the dental hospital at Witz. Nothing.
Oh. Detective Sergeant Gravett?
Same with me, sir. Not one of the laundries or dry cleaners around Joburg has ever seen the laundry mark I showed him.
Yeah, not very promising, is it? Lieutenant Lobuskogny?
Well, I was a donor bank, sir. But I picked up something which leads me to believe that the deceased might be an immigrant.
Yeah? And what's that?
Well, Tunica shirts aren't sold in South Africa. They're manufactured in Britain, and the manufacturers aren't represented here. There's no agent handling them.
Well, it doesn't necessarily follow he's an immigrant. He could be a South African citizen who's been overseas and bought the shirt while he was over there.
Yes, that's also possible.
Well, we're not getting very far.
Anything more from Professor Quayle, sir?
Yes. He says the deceased was a man of about 35 and 6 feet 1 inch tall and weighed almost 200 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Big boy.
Yes. And there's also the ballistics report from the Criminal Bureau about the bullet Professor Quayle removed from the skull of the deceased. It's a 2.2 long rifle ammunition, Fiormi, made in Finland.
Well, it's another lead.
Yeah, slim one there. Right, who's going to take it?
Well, I'm free now, sir.
All right. And what's your next move, Lieutenant?
Well, this is not a reflection on Detective Sergeant Gravett, sir, but I'm very disappointed in the result of these inquiries at dry cleaners and laundries. Who did you talk to, Sergeant?
Managers and owners, mostly.
I thought so. Owners don't know what's going on in their own businesses. I think we'll go out again, you and I, Sergeant. This time we'll talk to the people actually concerned with the marking of garments.
Right, sir.
Do you want me to get you some?
Get me some? What?
Corn blasters.
8 days later, 2:50 p.m. Lieutenant Lobuskakny and Detective Sergeant Gravett are visiting a steam laundry, the renowned steam laundry in Commissioner Street East. They're talking to a woman worker concerned with laundry marks.
Here it is, in this photograph.
Yes?
Does that mean anything to you? RE357?
Yeah.
It does? What?
That's one of ours.
Are you sure?
Positive.
Who did you put it in for?
Shouldn't be difficult to find that. Just hang on a sec. Yes, here we are. You see?
Yes. R.E. Majestic Hotel. Oh, this is fabulous. But what do the numbers stand for?
Easy. His room number. Number 57.
p.m. Armed with that information, the two policemen drive to the Majestic Hotel and interview the manager.
Yes?
Well, I want to know who's occupied that room lately.
How recently?
Well, probably in the last 3 weeks.
3 weeks. Let me see. There's a Mr. Brownlow in there at the moment. Before him, there was Mr. Florey. He'd be here about that time.
Where is he now?
Well, he's away at the moment.
You mean he's coming back?
Well, that's what he said. He left his things there in the baggage room.
What does this Mr. Florey do?
He's a salesman.
Where is he?
Out in the country somewhere. Traveling around, you know.
Is he out from England by any chance?
Yes. Came here to settle.
I think I'd better have a look at his things.
I don't know about that.
I've reason to believe that Mr. Florey is dead.
Oh, I see. It's just through here.
Has Mr. Florey stayed here long?
Oh, about 5 or 6 weeks, before he went away, that is. Stuff's in here.
Oh, thanks.
That trunk and these two suitcases.
Right. Now, let's have a look.
Got your own keys, huh?
It's something I picked up in the Boy Scouts. Did Mr. Florey have any friends?
He was a very lively sort. He was always in company.
Did he knock about with anybody in particular?
Yes, a young boxer called Jimmy Bann.
Where do I find him?
Easy. He's in here every night.
The evening of May the 7th, 6:35 p.m., Lieutenant Lobuskakny and Warrant Officer Britt are sitting unobtrusively in the hotel foyer.
Hello, Eric.
Oh, good evening, Jimmy.
Got a table for dinner?
How many?
Just me and the dog.
Come on, Warrant Officer.
Right, sir.
What time?
About 7:10.
Mr. Jimmy Bann?
Hmm? Yeah, that's right.
I'm a police officer. I'd like a word with you.
Huh? What about?
Frisk you, Mr. Britt.
Right, sir. Now, look here. I'll stick you out if you touch me.
You start any trouble, I'll finish it. Stand still.
Lousy cops.
Hello? What's this?
It's a revolver. What does it look like?
I hear you're handy with your fists.
I do all right.
And what does a tough youngster like you want to do with firearms? Do they come too big for you sometimes? I should think a tall chap weighing about 200 pounds could take you, all right?
Yeah.
A Cobra. 2-2. I'm taking you in.
What for?
On suspicion of having murdered Mr. William Florey on or about the 17th of April.
You're going to have a hard time making a charge like that stick.
I don't think so. It depends.
Yeah?
on whether our ballistic staff can match the bullet found in Flory's brain with this gun.
And what if they can?
Then they'll hang you, my boy.
When it was pointed out to Jimmy Van that the police might have enough evidence on which to convict him, the tough facade fell away, revealing a small-time thug and bully. The motive behind William Flory's death was robbery. Van had driven Flory out of town with the intention of beating and robbing him. But Van's weight was against him. He used a box as a lightweight at 134 pounds. Fitted against Flory's 200 pounds, bullying with his fists proved ineffective. Flory was too much for him. He pretended to make it up with Flory and then shot him as he sat in the car. Flory was so big and strong, though, but the shot behind his ear didn't kill him. In fact, he dragged himself from the car and was going for Van when he collapsed. Van then shot him in the top of the head. How much did he get? 63 runs. A paltry figure which cost Jimmy Van his life, for he was brought to trial, sentenced to death, and hanged at Pretoria Central Prison.
They prowl the empty streets at night, waiting. In fast cars, on foot, living with crime and violence. These men are on duty 24 hours out of every 24. They face dangers at every turn, expecting nothing less. They protect the people of South Africa. These are the men of squad cars. Listen again next Friday evening to another dramatic story in our authentic South African police series, Squad Cars. Squad Cars is directed by Colin Fish and produced by David Goodman.